This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Welcome back. This is episode 463 of the NYYST podcast. We're presented by NYY Underground. I am your host, Christian, and I'm with my co-host, Sem.
What's up?
What's up, bro? You told me before we clicked record here you're not feeling so well. Allergies got you again?
I think allergies got me. I mowed my lawn yesterday without a mask on.
Okay. No mask. It's 2025. No mask. Okay. Now he's got allergies. See how that worked out? You mask up. Okay. But he didn't. Now you got allergies. The Yankees looked like they might have been allergic to winning in this series against the San Diego Padres, but they managed to pull two out of three out of their hat. Almost, it looked like, after they pretty much gave away game one on Monday, and then they were able to pull out a couple of wild wins on Tuesday and Wednesday to take the series against San Diego. Got a lot to break down over these last 3 days before as the Yankees enjoy an off day here as they're on their way to Sacramento to play the Oakland. Oh, can't say that anymore. Okay, it's banned. They're not in Oakland. I should know that. I literally just said on their way to Sacramento, but to play the Athletics out at a minor league ballpark. This is the second team the Yankees are going to be facing this year at a minor league ballpark. But before we get into everything, please subscribe to the NYYST podcast on your favorite podcast platform. Some of you are listening to us on that right now. And if you're watching on NYY Underground as we're airing on tape delay, please still subscribe to the show. We don't want you to miss any shows that are going on throughout the course of the season, some audio only, some here on also on NYYU. But if you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you won't miss anything. And if you're listening, or excuse me, watching on NYYU, please like this video and subscribe to the show and the channel. And make sure you tell everybody NYYST is the official Yankee podcast of Odyssey. I haven't watched a series like this in a very long time where it just seemed like the team was dead. They had a win in their pocket on Monday, gave it away, looked like they were going to lose again on Tuesday before the giant outburst in the seventh inning, and then looked like they were going to lose again on Wednesday before the clutch performance of not only Trent Grisham, but you got to give a lot of credit to Devin Williams for the way he performed in the 10th inning on Wednesday. And I guess I want to start the show here. There's a lot to digest in these last three games, but I do think since Devin Williams has been such a major talking point for the first quarter of this season, that we start here, because on Monday, the thing that really pissed me off the most about Devin Williams is that he caused the Yankees to lose a game in which Carlos Rodon put his big boy pants on and pitched a friggin' gem on Monday night, 6 2/3 innings, and he came back after the of scoreless baseball, even came back after the rain delay. It wasn't a super long rain delay, but you figured that maybe he was far enough along in the game, plus the length of the rain delay, that Boone would have taken him out of the game. Didn't, came back, still pitched phenomenally. I mean, this is the fourth straight strong start we've gotten out of Carlos Rodon. And I just got to say, man, maybe he's got me believing right now. I can't trust you, but maybe he's got me believing. But I will get into the starting pitching a little bit later on in the show. But I want to get to Devin Williams right now, where it wasn't pretty on Monday night. The Yankees entered the eighth inning after 6 2/3 from Rodon. Fernando Cruz gets to throw all of two pitches because the runner gets ball gets in the dirt. Runner gets tagged out at home. Boone said that's enough for him. Brings in Devin Williams. Complete implosion. Puke all over the mound. And then Luke Weaver, for one of the first times all season, didn't have it. You know, gives up a couple of hits after Williams leaves the bases loaded. Four runs scored. Those are the first run charged to Weaver in that game. Yankees can't mount anything in the eighth or ninth. They lose, right? Now you're getting the wild hot takes from people on social media. And I'm going to say it's a wild hot take because, yeah, Devin Williams has been pretty terrible this season. And I know there's no love for him amongst Yankee fans because we've talked about this numerous times on this show, that regardless of whether or not you want it, the beard rule gone, he was the guy that got it changed. And if you're going to be the guy that got it changed, you have to be worthy of getting that rule changed. And he's been anything but. After his performance on Monday, his ERA sat over 10, which is just ridiculous that in the first week of May, we have a guy that's supposed to be the best closer in baseball, already lost his job, and has an ERA over 10. But that's where we were. Right. So what is the wild hot take then? He's already lost his job. Well, you got to trade him. What exactly did you guys think that the Yankees were going to get for Devin Williams? Now, I made jokes on this show in the past about, hey, his price tag was only Nestor Cortez, so what can you expect? The Yankees are not even getting anything close to a Nestor Cortez in return for Devin Williams right now. It would just be to get him out of here, and you'd be lucky to get a couple of used hot dog wrappers for him right now. And we all know that the Yankees aren't going to sell low on Devin Williams. They're not going to just get rid of him. They're going to try to fix him and try to make him the elite reliever and pair him with Luke Weaver to have that lockdown back end of his bullpen. Because if you get Devin Williams right, which we're going to get to in a second, with Luke Weaver, with Fernando Cruz, with Tim Hill, and Ian Hamilton's on my shit list after what he did yesterday, and Jonathan Loaisiga is on his way back. Now his rehab has been transferred up to AAA. You have a pretty formidable back end of this rotation, back end of this bullpen, where you can pretty much count on winning a lot of games, even though the Yankees have blown a lot of games when leading after seven innings, which a lot of that is attributed to Devin Williams. But you look at it becoming a real strength of this team. So, no, the Yankees are not going to sell on Devin Williams on, what was that, May 5th? It was Cinco de Mayo. On May 5th, they're not going to sell on Devin Williams at that point. If you felt that he just to get him out of here, oh, he's got to go, he can't cut it, that's fine. That might be a reasonable take for somebody to have, but you know, it's never just that with Yankee fans on social media. It's like, oh, we got to get some of the return. If we could get, you know, a serviceable third, serviceable third starter, okay? Not even like a back end, a third starter that can eat some innings. What team is lining up right now to trade you their number three for Devin Williams? There's nobody. So basically, on the first full week of May here, we got to live with this. And it was bad on Monday. No one's going to sugarcoat that. But I will give Devin Williams a lot of credit. He, in all honesty, he tried to give that game up last night on Wednesday night. The ghost runner's already on second base in the 10th inning, and I tweeted it, and there's not a Yankee fan alive that thought he was getting out of that unscathed, especially we're going top of the order with Tatis, Arraez, Machado, and Jackson Merrill. Okay, he gets Tatis on a strikeout, then he walks Arraez, he strikes out Machado, and you're like, maybe this guy has got it. And then he hits Jackson Merrill, and then he goes 3-2 with Xander Bogaerts, and that was just a filthy, that's the airbender. That was pure filth on that 3-2 pitch to Xander Bogaerts. Got him, strike three, strikes out three of their best hitters. Two of the three best hitters in all of baseball. Finally, for once, Devin Williams showed some guts, showed some balls on that mound, showed the Yankee fans a glimpse of who he is. Obviously, you don't like to walk. Obviously, you don't like to hit by pitch to exacerbate the situation there. But I can confidently say that for the first time, and even with that string of scoreless outings that he had, for the first time in 2025, and the first time that since Devin Williams has been a New York Yankee, he instilled a little bit of confidence in me based on his performance on Wednesday night.
He got pretty fired up, too, when he was done pitching. You know, you could see that he was...
And I'm glad you brought that up, and I don't mean to cut you off after I did the, you know, my long monologue there, but he showed a lot of emotion last night, and that was the first time we've seen positive emotion out of Devin Williams as a New York Yankee.
And he needed that. You know, you think it's just normal, you know, people would need something like that. He's fired up. He's excited. He got it done. Hopefully that's the catalyst that gets everything going and turns everything around for him. But that airbender last night was filthy. And it was, I remember I looked over at my wife. I was like, now this is how he's supposed to be pitching. And then it got a little scary. But then when he struck out Bogaerts, I was like, whoa. Because that pitch was filth. You know, I didn't watch him pitch on Monday. I fell asleep. I did wake up, though, and I saw they were losing. I go, what happened? And my wife told me what happened. I was like, oh. So, you know, I wasn't surprised. I'm like, oh, wow. He came into the game. And then, you know, like people, I saw some people here and there getting down on Weaver and all that stuff. But like, this guy can't be Superman and come in and get us out of every single position. He was handed a shitty hand and he played what he had. And, you know, they ended up losing the game. But yesterday, I really think that was an outing that Devin Williams needed because it gives you confidence and he knows that he still has it and he could go out there and he could perform. It might not be the greatest thing for him because now we know he can do it. So now we're going to expect that even that much more often, but it's there. Pete Alonso didn't break Devin Williams, you know, arm or anything like that. It's just, it seems really like it's a confidence thing.
If last night's performance from Devin Williams doesn't get him rolling, I don't think anything will. If he cannot build off of what he did in the 10th inning against that part of that lineup and getting Tatis, Machado, and Bogaerts on strikeouts, nothing is going to there. Then there is no hope for him. If the Yankees pitch him tomorrow night and they're up 3-2 in the 8th inning and he gives up, you know, and that's a crazy thing about if you watch Devin Williams, how many times has he truly gotten hit hard? His problem is that he is not throwing with a lot of conviction, which means that he's missing the strike zone. He doesn't feel confident that his stuff can get guys out, and that's why he's walking a lot of guys and putting himself in bad counts. Very rarely, I don't even know if he's given up a home run this year. I can't really recall one, so it's not like he's going out there and getting tattooed every time he goes out there. His problem is, for whatever reason, it seems like it's a lack of confidence. and getting Bogaerts plus that visceral release that he had coming off the mound. If that does not get him going, if he goes out there and just continues to vomit on himself every single time he goes out there, then there is no hope for him, because I feel like this is a direct line in the sand, turning point positive, turning point throw the white towel in on him, because either he's going to use this as a jump start to get his season going and become one of the top closers in baseball again, or we're going to get an answer on him that he just can't do it in New York.
Yeah, it's like you brought up before. It's like some of the best hitters in the game, he did that to. Like, I think Tatis didn't even strike out that game. Did Arise, did he strike out in that game at all? Those were their first strikeouts, I think.
He struck out in that series. Somebody got him. It might have been either Fried or Rodon. Definitely got a rise in the series.
No, well, but that game. But in that game alone, I think that was their first strikeouts, because they're nasty.
Well, Tatis had a 3-strikeout game in game one.
Yeah, but he went up there. He did what he had to do. He was fired up when he got off the mound. I mean, it got me fired up. I wanted to go out in my yard and mow the lawn or something like that, you know. It gave me like energy. So yeah, if that doesn't fire him up and help turn things around, you know, and we're sitting here in 2 weeks talking about how shitty his play is, I wouldn't be disagreeing with, do we need to just trade him to get him out of here for a couple hot dog wrappers? Because at that point, it's just a killjoy, you know. No one wants to play around that.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
College football summer is no time to slouch, because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series, as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit, as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right. If he can't build off this, then the Yankees have to kind of figure to themselves, maybe this is just not going to happen, and maybe a change of scenery would be best for him, because he can't want this type of season on a walk year. He's not going to get paid. He's going to get a 1 year, you're going to have to prove it to me deal. And he's already, I believe he's already 30 years old. It's not working in his favor as a short reliever, because these guys don't get the long-term deals usually the way that starting pitchers do. Yeah, he's 31. He's going to turn 31 in September. So he's already, you know, as the way you look at it, he's already a little bit older. He's entering free agency. So for him to come out here and not get off to the start, his ERA is currently 9.24, even with the scoreless outing yesterday. It's just not where he wants to be. And, you know, maybe he would say to himself, hey, you know what, if I can't build off that, maybe I need to get out of here, because I got to get paid next year. I don't want to take a 1 year, $2 million deal to show people I can still do it. I want to get 3-4 at, like, you know, a 12, 13, 14, whatever, you know, top relievers get these days. So again, Devin Williams, loved what I saw last night in terms of, he got the big out. He made the pitch he needed to make, and then that released. That was what that was more than like, oh yeah, 10th inning, we got out of it, you know, and you see pitchers pumping their chest. That was a sense of relief for him. That was building. That's been building up really since opening day when he nearly squandered that game. And then all the struggles that he had, that was him letting it all go and being like, oh, finally, maybe I can do this. So that was a big game for Devin Williams last night. And then, you know, let's kind of stay with Wednesday's game here, because the Yankees were getting no hit into the seventh inning. Then Cody banged one into the second deck. That ball was out of the strike zone high, got to it, 1-1. And then why is Ian Hamilton on my shit list? He walked two guys. Guess who were the two guys that scored in the eighth inning? Both of Ian Hamilton's walks. Again, you bring in Weaver. He allows the inherited runners to score, not killing Luke Weaver. Boone's putting him in terrible positions. And, yeah, if you're a top-end guy, maybe you should be getting out of them. But you see maybe his stuff's a little bit flat right now. It's okay. It's Luke Weaver. I'm not worried about it. When he's not cleaning up somebody else's mess, he's still been nasty, nearly unhittable this year. So I'm not concerned about his performance in this series. But then you go into the eighth inning, and, you know, last episode we sat here and ripped Boone for sitting on his hands. And he went and he was proactive. And granted, it was Vivas, right? Is that who he pinch hit for?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, what else are we going to say about Trent Grisham right now?
He's nasty.
What are you going to say? I mean, what else can we possibly say about Trent Grisham? If I told you there's three guys in all of Major League Baseball that have at least 10 home runs and an OPS of 1,000, and I told you two to three of them were Ohtani and Judge, what would your answer be? Duh.
It wouldn't be Trent Grisham.
Yeah, but I'm saying, if I told you two to three of them were Judge and Ohtani, your answer would be like, yeah, duh, no kidding. Like, I would.
Oh, yeah.
When I tell you that the third guy on that list is Trent Grisham, you'd ask me what kind of drugs I was taking. No,
exactly.
Absolutely not. That Trent Grisham is in the same class of Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani, probably the two best hitters in all of baseball.
Yeah, it's wild. Especially after last season. It's wild. It's crazy to watch. It's cool to watch. It's, I don't know. I always say on here that people go and they go on their paternity leave and then they come back and they suck because children break him. He's like the complete opposite. I don't know. Maybe the guy feels reinvigorated.
So he comes up with the clutch home run. And you got to give Boone credit for trying to make something happen there, which is what he didn't do on Sunday. And then in the 10th inning, you know, we killed Boone for letting J.C. Ascara hit. He pinch hits with J.C. Ascara in the 10th inning. I guess there's not a lot of moves he can make at that point because that was Peraza's spot, I believe.
Peraza's spot, yeah.
So he wants the lefty in there, and he gives Ascara a lot of credit there with Dominguez at third base. And that was a beautiful inning that we saw unfold, starting with the strikeout of Bogaerts. Dominguez is the ghost runner, and Cabrera lays down the perfect sack bunt after he botched one earlier when he popped it up. Lays it down perfectly. This is exactly how you want to build a run when you're at home in the extra innings and you only need that one run to win. And then Ascara, man, he knew what he needed to do in that situation. Get the ball in the air. Took it the other way. And, you know, Jason Hayward's a dick. He really is. He knew the ball was deep enough that they weren't going to get Dominguez. You couldn't let the kid get a hit. You couldn't let Ascara get a walk-off hit in that spot. You have to catch it. Kind of a dick move. But
yeah.
The Yankee, you should be upset by that.
Why?
Because he could have let it drop. He knows that they're not getting Dominguez. He had to catch the ball.
They're professional baseball players. They don't want their catcher to have a stat go against him.
So Yankees win on Wednesday night. Really, that was a really, really good win for the Yankees. That's a really, really good team in the Padres, and they take the series. So how do we? So let's move backwards here. That 10-run inning was just bonkers on Tuesday night, you know. And you heard Paul O'Neill in the booth saying that's the best the Yankees offense has looked all year. And you're talking, they hit 9 home runs in a game. They put up 15 runs here and all this. But just the quality of at-bats the Yankees had in that 10th inning, and they didn't need the home run until the very end when Austin Wells put the cherry on top with the grand slam, that they just all had really, really good at-bats, kept the line moving. You love to see it. It was a really good outing from Clark Schmidt. Give you his final numbers on from he went 6 innings, gave up 2 runs. I mean, that was probably the best he's looked all year. Really good performance from him, and kept the Yankees in the game against Michael King there, who looked on as well. So it was, like I said, man, this is what frustrates you about the Yankees, right? Can't beat Baltimore, who's now 10 games under. Can't beat Tampa, who, let's face it, the Yankees are better than. Then you have you actually have one of the handful of top teams, a team that you can say, along with the Dodgers, along, you want to say the Mets, the Phillies, you want to take 4 teams out of the NL that have a legitimate shot to go to the World Series. San Diego's in the conversation for sure, and the Yankees beat them 2 out of 3. I mean, yeah, that's baseball, Susan.
That's baseball, Susan. Yeah, I was at the game on Tuesday, and that place was friggin' electric. It was wild. I sit right where that grand slam was hit. I legit sit a few rows back from there. That was my section. I wasn't there when it got hit. I was standing by right behind home plate. My wife wanted some ice cream, so we were walking over there. I said, we're not going to leave until Judge hits. I want to see Judge hit. I'm the type of guy that likes to get out of there before the 9th inning. I don't want to sit in the traffic. I hate it. And then they walk Judge, and the boos, it was insane. And then everything just fell into place. It was nuts. Everybody, I was high-fiving concession stand workers. Everybody was at a standstill watching everything was happening. Usually, Yankee Stadium is always people walking around. Everybody was standing there watching. It was so cool to see, because it just doesn't happen. And my wife looked at me like, do you want to go? Because she knew I wanted to leave. I'm like, no, let's wait. Because I said, it's bases loaded. Wells is coming up, and I'm not leaving when that situation. And then crack. Wham. That was so amazing to watch. Again, it's something that I think that he needed. It's great baseball. It was cool. Then you're watching, and they go through the order and everything like that. And good old Wandy Peralta. I thought I got his jersey hanging behind me right now.
T.O. Wandy, man, still rooting for the Yankees.
I was like, wow. And I liked Wandy when he was here, and I don't give a shit that it happened to him. Oh, well. It was so cool to watch. But we've been to the stadium a million times. How many times have you ever been there where there's no one walking behind you and everybody's standing there, got their eyes on what's going on? It just doesn't happen.
That was a crazy – I mean, Wandy Peralta came into that game on Tuesday with an ERA under 2. He now has an ERA of 5.14. He walked 2, gave up 4 hits. They all scored. He was charged with 6 earned runs in 2/3 of an inning. And they were talking about this on the broadcast, that Wandy pitched every game in the 2022 ALDS against Cleveland. I believe he was on the mound. He was the one that got the final 3 outs when the Yankees clinched in Game 5. I mean, I always had a lot of respect for Wandy. He had balls of steel, man. The Yankees could put him in any situation. But it also was time for Wandy to go. I think the Yankees kind of, and you know, he's been okay. I didn't see what he did last year, but he was pitching well for San Diego up until that point. But you know, again, like you said, you'd almost prefer it to happen to somebody else, but you're also not mad about it, because Yankees really needed that. And Wandy, you know, helping his old team. Michael King didn't want to help his old team. He was really tough on him, although he gave up a home run to Aaron Judge. I think somebody else tagged him. I forget who else tagged him in that game. Who else? He gave up 2 solo home runs, I think. Who was the other home run?
Was it? I'm trying to think. Did Bellinger hit one?
I know Judge got him for the first one. Who?
Yes, Judge got him for the first one. But
I think he gave up. Did he give up two solo home runs? I'm almost positive that he did.
I don't know.
No, he did. He didn't. So how did the Yankees? Now I got to look this up. How did the Yankees get that other run? That's going to bother me. Why does it go to June? If I leave that game and then I go back in, it goes to June. The Yankees scored two runs that inning. Let's see here. Oh, Jason Dominguez. And then it was a throwing error by Tatis allowed Cody to score.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it happened. All right. I mean, you know, Dominguez is looking a lot better. It's just so curious how the Yankees use him. It was Sunday. He scolds two balls from each side of the plate. He doesn't play on Monday. Yeah, then Tuesday, he has hits from both sides of the plate. I joked. I was like, guaranteed bench, but he was in the lineup on Wednesday. The Yankees are – I understand the dilemma that the Yankees are in, but you have to just start playing Dominguez every day. But now the problem with that is saying, you know, a lot of people are like, well, Cody's been terrible. Cody's – Bellinger's coming around here in the last, you know, week to 10 days here where he's playing a lot more like the guy we expected him to be. So it's – and then you can't really DH anybody because, you know, Ben Rice had a big hit in that 10-run inning. You know, just – the logjam for playing time is going to get even worse in a couple weeks when Giancarlo Stanton comes back. And now they got to figure out a way to get Ben Rice in. And people, you know, I make a joke that he should grab a third baseman's glove. I don't, obviously, I don't expect the Yankees to play Ben Rice at third base. It's a joke because it's a black hole for the Yankees and they could really use Rice's bat when Giancarlo Stanton comes back. And no, I honestly don't understand why people think the Yankees are going to go to a strict platoon with Rice and Judge. I'm sorry, Rice and Stanton. That Stan's only going to play against left-handers. I honestly can't see that happening. I just don't think the Yankees are going to go down that route. And even if Stan comes back on the 26th, which is the first day he's eligible, it'll probably be 2 to 3 weeks before the Yankees feel comfortable giving him a full workload anyway. But I hate the term. It's a good problem to have. You'd like as many good, healthy players as possible. But trying to find playing time right now for Jason Dominguez is an issue. And it's going to be – you're going to want to play Ben Rice and Giancarlo Stanton. It's going to – you know, and it just sucks that neither one of them play – any of those guys don't play third base.
Yeah, I don't think Ben Rice is anywhere near athletic enough to be.
And Goldschmidt's been doing really well, so you can't say, oh, Rice just plays first base now because you can't take Goldie out of the lineup, not only because he's been really good at the plate, he plays a stellar first base.
You got to trade Stanton.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's just one of the most asinine things I hear from fans because, number one, he's the only guy in his roster that you're going to guarantee he's going to show up in October. And number two, who the hell is trading for Giancarlo Stanton where the Yankees aren't eating 99% of that contract? And at that point, why wouldn't you just keep him?
Well, because the Yankees don't have to eat 99% of that contract because the Marlins would be paying some of that contract.
Oh, great. But the Yankees
I got you on a technicality.
Yeah, well, the technicality, I got to look into it. I think there's a loophole in the contract. If he gets moved, then the Marlins don't have to pay any of it. I got to look into that. But I had heard that somewhere. That's part of that would be a hindrance for anybody, or not anybody, but for the Yankees. But Stan's, I mean, I think we're a lot closer to figuring out who's going to be playing second base for the Yankees, and that's going to be DJ LeMahieu. I mean, obviously, he's working his way back here. He's in Scranton on rehab. And with Jazz out 4 to 6 weeks now, it looks like DJ LeMahieu is just going to be handed the second base job. That's what Boone said in the interim while Jazz is out. It's going to be more second base for DJ LeMahieu. Here's where I am with this. Do we want DJ LeMay tagged in the lineup every day? No.
No.
Could he possibly be worse than Pablo Reyes?
No.
So he's going to play?
Yes.
There you go.
My whole thing is, are they going to send down Vivas, or are they going to release Reyes?
I would, if I'm the Yankees, okay, which obviously we know the Yankees don't always do what I would do, I would just DFA Reyes. I mean, what are you holding on to him for?
None. You get rid of him and you save an option on Vivas. I think it works out pretty well.
I'll give you just a quick thought on Vivas. I hate his load. When he gets ready to hit and his hands go back, I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I don't think he's ever going to hit major league pitching if he continuously does that. If somebody works with him on that and being shorter and quicker to the ball, I do like his swing, and I do think that he could be a major league hitter. But not with the way he loads his hands and get into the hitting position. No. I just he's going to get beat time and time again. Especially to me, it doesn't look like anything that is going to help him with elite velocity. So I would... James Rousen, I don't know what you're doing, buddy, or the guy, I forget his name, the one that Jazz bites, the other hitting coach. One of them's got to work with Vivas on that. But again, I can't.
Go ahead. Technical breakdown. So that was a very technical breakdown.
Oh, thank you. I can't really get mad. You're welcome. I really can't get mad at the Yankees by inserting DJ with Jazz out. If Jazz was here and they were just going to hand the third base job to DJ LeMahieu, again, I can't really get mad. I mean, the Yankees are just faced with, they have options, but none of them are really appealing. So it makes it a lot easier to just give DJ a job right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be mad at it. Like, listen, did I want DJ back? No. Did I want Jazz hurt, though? No. So it's kind of just, he's there, he could fill the role, and he's not Pablo Reyes, so just give him the job.
The Yankees have Pablo Reyes, Oswald Peraza, Oswaldo Cabrera, and Jordi Vivas on this roster. Each one of them can, you know, handle, between the four of them, you can easily handle second and third, and nobody has taken this job by the balls and said, this is mine. Nobody's went out there and said, okay, we know DJ's coming back. I got one of these. You know, and that's so it for everybody like me that didn't even want DJ LeMahieu on the opening day roster, let alone in the friggin' lineup, it just makes it easier to accept because nobody is taking a job. Nobody's performed to a level where you're saying, well, there's no space for DJ because you can't possibly get less production out of those two positions than you've had so far. So you might as well kick the tires one last time on DJ LeMahieu.
Yeah, and you got Cabrera pulling errors all the time. Peraza had an error the other day that would have ended the game. It's just that no one, I mean, Vivas really hasn't been here very long, but he's not going to be the one that I think would have taken that job, you know? So just give it to LeMahieu, hopefully, and you give him the chance to be the LeMahieu that we all want him to be, you know? And if he is, he is. If he's not, then he's what we think he is. He's a washed up old man that can't play baseball anymore and should have bowed out when he had the chance.
Boone thinks that Jazz could be on the shorter end of the timetable. So let's say it is. So tomorrow, you listening to this on Friday, it'll be a week since he's been put on the IL. He was put on the IL on May 2nd, retroactive to whatever. Okay. So let's say Jazz is back in 3 weeks. There's your timetable to see if DJ LeMahieu still has it.
No, he's got to have it quick, too, or else hook. Because if DJ has it, you can stick him at third base.
But that's the thing, too. The Yankees will ultimately be more patient with DJ LeMahieu, even if he shows you in these 3 weeks that he doesn't have it. Because unless somebody in these 3 weeks steps up out of that, I'm going to assume that it's Pablo Reyes is the one that's out of here. Out of those three remaining guys and steps up and takes third base, then DJ, then the Yankees will just say, okay, DJ, we'll move you to third base. And then we'll, you know, Peraza could be expendable or Vivas could be expendable at that point. So it's not a position you want. See, the Yankees have a cluster of guys that they need to play in the outfield slash DH that you all want in the lineup, right? And you can't get all of them in there. And then they have a cluster of guys at second and third that you don't want any of them in the lineup.
Yeah.
It's not an enviable position for the Yankees. You have guys that you're going to be sitting that you don't want to be sitting, and you got guys that are playing that you don't want to be playing, but there's just no crossover in the positions there to make it work out.
Yeah.
So I guess the last thing we can talk about is Max Fried. I mean, Jesus. I love this guy. I'm sorry. And you know what? We talked about it. We had it first. Okay. Said Gerrit Cole's got to be around the team more. And where was he this week?
Right in the dugout.
Right there. There he was, number 45. And I know he was here because of the welcome home dinner was on. It was Saturday night, I believe. So he was here for that. And, you know, he stuck around for the rest of the homestand. But, you know, Boone said that the brace is off. It'll be good for him to be around the guys. This is what I love about Gerrit Cole. He's like just this quirky guy. He comes off like a nerd in some ways, but you just love him for the things that he says. And he's like, yeah, you know, I've been pitching every night before I go to bed, and I haven't given up a hit yet. That's what I miss about him, man. I'm sorry. Like I miss him just giving interviews and saying shit like that. I just, aside from missing him being on the mound, and I forget somebody, it might've been Kay or Susan or somebody said it. It's just, I miss watching the guy pitch. And I miss watching him pitch. I miss seeing him in the dugout. I miss hearing him talk. I miss Gerrit Cole, but I love Max Fried, man. And again, yesterday, he made one mistake to Jackson Merrill. Jackson beat him for the home run, and one run over seven innings, eight Ks. Just another masterful performance for Max Fried. And I met up with an old buddy of mine on my route on Wednesday, and he was joking, and I joked with him because we were talking about the Yankees, and I said, Max Fried's not going to know what to do with himself. He's pitching after a Yankee win because his last four starts were all after losses. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, this is likely the time he'll get bombed. And again, he didn't because he's Max Fried and he's fucking awesome. But, I mean, I'm going to say this again, and I'm so mad for a plethora of reasons that Gerrit Cole is missing this season. But the biggest reason that I'm mad is I don't get to see the two of them pitch together in this rotation, feeding off of each other. Because I'm telling you right now, with Gerrit Cole and Max Fried pitching like aces and Carlos Rodon coming up the rear with these four consecutive starts that he's had, this is what we've been dreaming about. This is what we wanted, the super rotation, three aces. But unfortunately, Cole's not here. You're getting it out of the two lefties right now, and you're hoping that Clark Schmidt is going to build off of this performance when he gave up two, earned over six, and maybe he's rounded into shape here. And one of them was a bullshit balk, run scored on a balk.
Has that been explained yet?
I don't know. I didn't hear an explanation, really. Something about maybe he didn't come fully set, or you know how he kind of rocks a little bit before he throws the pitch. Maybe it was somebody was saying maybe it was a different rock than he normally did. I have no idea. I didn't see anything that would have alerted me, but the umpire saw it right away and whatever. But I think Max Fried has just been absolutely phenomenal, man. And we've called him a consolation prize for losing Juan Soto. But he's not a consolation prize, man. This guy is a legitimate ace. He's a badass out on that mound. And I think the thing that Yankee fans, you know, they worry about the length of the contract and is he going to age well, and he's already you know, he's already over on the wrong side of 30 and blah, blah. He doesn't rely on elite velocity to get you out. Sure, when he wants it, 95, 96 is there, but he doesn't need that. That's not what he's looking for. He's not looking to blow you away with 98+. He's looking to get you to hit ground balls or beat you with his breaking ball. So I think Max Fried is going to age very, very well deep into that contract for the Yankees. And I'll tell you what, man, you know, you can't replace Juan Soto's production in this lineup. But for the 2025 Yankees, it's hard to argue against this point that Max Fried is more valuable to the Yankees than what Juan Soto would have been.
Ugh.
The Yankees have a losing record in games that Max Fried does not start. They're 8-0 in his starts. They're three games under 500 in the games that he doesn't.
No, he's definitely, dude. He is. So again, you know, I'm going to the game. I've seen him pitch two or three times so far this year, and when I'm checking to see who's to be pitching the games I'm going to, I get excited when I see it's Fried. You know, and it really brings out the fact that Cole isn't here. Like, if the Yankees came out and they were sucking, all right, cool. I'm glad that Cole had to get hurt. Well, not that glad that he got hurt, but if it had to be a year, I'm glad it's this year. Whereas when Rodon and Fried are pitching like that, it's that much more noticeable. Because like you said, it's what we've been waiting for. It's what we've wanted. It really puts a spotlight on it. But Fried is just filthy. It's cool to watch. You know, I like that he's pitching the games I'm going to, but then I get aggravated at the same time because I want to be watching it on TV so I could actually see the pitches, you know, and not me having to go watch it on a recap or something like that. But he really is. He's not a consolation prize. He's 8 wins. He's got 7 wins out of that?
He's got 6.
He's got 6? Yeah,
he's 8-0 in his starts.
Yeah. Oh, he's nasty.
He gave up one run yesterday. This is how good Max Fried has been. He gave up one run over 7 innings yesterday, and his ERA went up. That's how good Max Fried has been for the Yankees in 2025. That he came into the game with an ERA. I believe his ERA was 1.01. I believe that's correct. And it's what is it right now? It's 1.0.
I had just seen it.
How did my thing go all the way back to 2025? Holy shit! This app is stupid.
Right now, Max Fried is pitching to.
Oh, he didn't get the win yesterday.
1.05.
Yeah, so it actually went up a few ticks. It came into the game 1.01. And it went up to 105. That's how dominant he's been. And I, you know what? I gotta say this. You know, I saw something on X today that really triggered me, and it should trigger all Yankee fans. That Joel Reuter of BR Walkoff has got to be the dumbest moron in the history of dumb morons. That he put out his list of the top lefty starters in baseball this year, and he's got Max Fried ranked sixth. When Max Fried's ERA is lower than every single person on that list above him, and by, like, Mackenzie Gore's ERA is in the mid-threes, and he's fifth. You got Andrew Heaney, who, granted, is pitching really well, but you got him ranked number one as the best lefty over the reigning Cy Young Award winner, Tarik Skubal. Do you even know what you're talking about? This just proves that any time, you know what? Fans, we should not let these lists trigger us because, number one, they're made by morons, and number two, it's pure rage bait because there's not a person alive that follows Major League Baseball that is supposed to be knowledgeable enough to put a list like this together that truly thinks Max Fried is the sixth best, not even sixth best pitcher in baseball, the sixth best left-hander in all of Major League Baseball.
How many runs did he give up his first game?
He got charged because there was some errors involved there. He got tagged with shit.
Well,
that's the wrong
well
game.
If you take out the for his first start, if you take out his first start when we were there, his ERA over the last seven games, right, is 0.77. 47 innings pitched. You guys freaking disgusting. So one game, because he gave up some runs that game, is what's putting him over one.
He gave up six runs in that game, but only two of them were earned because the defense was just atrocious in that game. The Yankees made five errors in that game.
So if it wasn't for that game, he'd have a sub one ERA.
Well, if it wasn't for all the errors that made, he could have went deeper into that game, and you know he would have definitely helped him out there. He could have pitched six or seven innings had it not been for all the errors. But you know what? We were there. He wasn't sharp. He wasn't locating. It wasn't really until the start after the Pittsburgh start in Detroit is that when he really locked in, and he's just been. I mean, he's worth every cent the Yankees have paid him so far. I get it, dude. It's May 9th. Tomorrow, Friday's May 9th. He's made eight starts. There's a long way to go in the season. There's a long way to go in his contract. But how many guys have we seen come in here on big money deals and just not be able to figure it out right away and just really not be able to figure it out ever? And it took Max Fried a start and a half, really.
Yeah, it's wild.
Because really, he kind of started locking in towards the end of that Pittsburgh start. Then even if you look at some of those starts, his last start, he wasn't great until the last four or five, until about the fourth, fifth, sixth inning. He didn't have his best stuff, but he was able to keep the Yankees in the game, keep the other team off the board until he figured it out and just started ping, 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 ping. And that's the great thing about Max Fried, man. And that's why I said, as long as he doesn't rely on the elite velocity to get you out, it's as long as he keeps that location, he's going to age so well. And I can't believe myself that, and I know Andy Pettit wasn't a big velocity guy, but he was Andy Pettit. I mean, he wasn't an ace, but he was the face, the one constant in all those rotations, that one of the dynasty. So of course you love Andy Pettit, but I can't believe that I'm in love with a guy that doesn't rely on gas. Like Gerrit Cole is a pitcher in the sense that he uses his brain as much as his stuff to get you out. But Gerrit Cole's got 99 in his back pocket anytime he wants it to blow gas by you. And I think that's one of the things I love about Gerrit Cole. Max Fried doesn't have that. I think he, you know, on a good day, he'll hit 95, 96 when he wants to rear back. And yeah, those extra 3 miles an hour make a hell of a difference. But just the way Max Fried takes the mound with that quiet confidence of knowing that I'm going to throw my shit, I'm going to throw it how I want to, and I'm going to throw it where I want to, and you're not going to hit it. How do you not love that, man? How do you not sit there and watch and just respect the hell out of this guy and say, you know what, Gerrit Cole's not here, and that's my ace, but damn it, man, if I could pick a replacement ace, that's the guy. That's I can't be unhappy with that.
No. I like it.
All right,
I like it a lot.
He likes Max Fried. He likes Max Fried a lot.
Okay. I like Max Fried a lot.
So again, man, this
Max Dorian Fried, I think the name is.
Is that his name?
I swear to God, I was just looking at it. Max Dorian Fried, nickname Maximus. He's born in 1894.
Can we call him Dory, like the fish?
Yeah.
And
Finding Dory.
So if Max Fried, well, not if, when, the next time Max Fried dominates at home, everybody, next time Max Fried pitches, first of all, we should just all go on Amazon and buy stuffed Dory dolls. And when he pitches well and he comes off the mound after his last batter, throw the Dorys on the field.
The bleacher creature should say, Dorian. That'd be great.
Nah, man, he's Mad Max, man.
Mad Max.
We don't have to fuck around with no fish, bro. He's Mad Max, man. He just goes out there, no nonsense, pitches gems. And I think that's another reason why I love Max Fried so much is that what we just said is that outside really excuse me, and Gerrit Cole's first year was so weird because of the COVID shit. Outside of Gerrit Cole, really, and CeCe struggled early on in 2009 before he really figured it out. You sign these big money pitchers, and we all know what happened in Rodon in 2023. You know, you sign these big money pitchers, and who comes out there, you know, just gem after gem after gem after gem in the first month and a half of the season? Nobody does it. Nobody's done it. Max Fried, he's the guy. He's the one that does it. It's nice when you go out there and you set a record-breaking contract to a guy and he comes out there and proves to you that he deserves what he's getting paid.
Yeah. How much? Yeah, Rodon was a bust his first year. He bust his second year.
Let me stop stuttering here for a second because it's hard for me to label him bust. He was not a number two last year. He was a letdown. He was a member of a major league rotation last year is what he was. He was a serviceable member of a major league rotation last year, but that's not what you're paying him $27 million a year to be. What he's been the last month, last couple of weeks here, that's what you're paying Carlos Rodon to be. And as much as I come on here and rip Carlos Rodon, I'm going to sing his praises when he deserves it. Because I don't want to say I trust you now. You're starting to make me believe because I have a ton of respect and admiration for the way he pitched on Monday because he could have came out there with every excuse in the book. I didn't feel right, the weather delay, blah, 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 and he just went out there and continued to throw up zeros. That was a big boy performance from Carlos Rodon, and I don't know, you can go look in last year what he's done this year and say best, not best. That was the most impressed I was with Carlos Rodon as a New York Yankee. It really was. 6 2/3 shutout innings against a really good team in San Diego, and the fact that he came back from a weather delay and continued to pitch really well. Because when he came out of that game, I said, that's it. That's going to cost the Yankees a game because they're going to be in the bullpen. And then he came back out, and I was like, all right, I like that he came back out, but how's he going to react to it? And he went out there and threw up another couple scoreless innings. So that was the, again, you want to argue best, you know, just start here, whatever. I don't care. Most impressed I was with him as a Yankee? Absolutely.
I agree with that. That's what we need out of him. That's what we've wanted. That's been the big gripe with him. He gets fired up and acts like a lunatic coming off the mound. We're never going to forget that. And then he just gives it up. Now he's just, I don't know if it's been a confidence thing with him or he's just finally putting it together. But I'm here for it, and I'm enjoying watching it.
So you know what I'm enjoying watching in Boston right now? Well, it's not the Knicks being up 2-0. I'm not a basketball fan at all. The first NBA I've watched all season was the end of the clincher against Detroit and then bits and pieces of these two games against Boston. But I'll root for the Knicks, obviously, New York. And obviously against Boston, you want to see New York beat Boston every time. What I'm enjoying watching out of Boston right now is another Rafael Devers meltdown.
Yes, I was watching that right before we got on. That's so great. I know I'm a major league player, but what do they want me to do? Play every position? That's great.
So they signed Bregman. Says I'm a third baseman. I'm not a DH. DH is strikes out like 16 times in the first week of the season. Obviously, it's kind of evened out a little bit here. And you know what? He gave Gerrit Cole his most embarrassing moment on a baseball field and made me embarrassed to be a Gerrit Cole fan. So, you know, screw him. Okay, I don't care. I hope he's getting every bit of angst that he deserves here. But now Tristan Casas is out for the year after he ruptured his patella, I believe the injury was. Obviously, you don't want to see that and hope the kid makes a recovery and gets back on a baseball field because I think it was Dustin Fowler when he slid into that electrical box in Chicago. He was just never the same after that. But Now they wanted to play first base, and he told the Red Sox to go kiss his ass, basically. This is the quote from Devers. He goes, "I know I'm a ball player, but at the same time, they can't expect me to play every position out there. In spring training, they talked to me and basically told me to put away my glove. I wasn't going to play anything other than DH, so right now I just feel like it's not an appropriate decision for them to ask me to play another position. It was a GM that I spoke with. I'm not sure what he has with me." He played ball, Craig Breslow. I believe he was a pitcher, Breslow. He's a Red Sox GM now. And I would like to think he knows that changing positions like that isn't easy. So, oh, well.
Good for him. Good for him. Keep doing it. Good
you
for
him. You can't say good for him, but then we rip Gleyber Torres when he says, I'm a second baseman to play second base.
Hey, no. Let Rafael Devers make an ass out of himself.
No, but
good
yes.
For him.
Yes, but please, yeah. After we dealt with it, you deal with this now, okay?
Yeah, I think it's great.
And he's got another. There's another piece of a quote that he told Breslow to hit the market to go quote hit the market to get a first baseman.
Did you watch this interview? Did you watch the interview or
I didn't watch it. I just read.
If he's like smiling, Dora, he knows he's being a douche. It's great. I love it.
Oh my god.
He's just smiling through the whole thing. He's doing it through his interpreter. And the interpreter stops, asks a question. He just keeps going on, and then he can see him. He's like, yeah.
You know what hit the market means? Kiss my ass. That's how that translates.
That's so great.
So the Red Sox right now are sitting in second place behind the Yankees, still because. Yankees won their last two, and so did Boston, but still three games behind the Yankees in a loss column. The Boston is the only other team in the American League East above 500. They're 20-19. Things have really gone off the rails for Baltimore. Like we said, they're 10-under. They've lost their last five in a row. So I don't know that when you see a team that you know is not that good, and then they beat you 2 out of 3. And you say, okay, maybe they're turning around, maybe they're getting on a hot streak, and they're 3-7 in their last 10 on a 5-game losing streak, and you're like, what? How? How did that happen? That was, yeah. And Yankees have to scrap and fight for every win, man. They might look at that series against Baltimore and be like, man, we've really screwed up by not taking that series.
Yeah.
But the Yankees still sit in first place here. As you'll be listening and watching this on May 9th, so still in a good spot, still three games up in the loss column. But they're heading out west to where they're going to play the surprising the A's, man. The A's are 20-18, so they're no pushover. They got Mason Miller throwing like 150 miles an hour coming out of the back end of that bullpen. You know, they got Brent Rooker. They got a couple of nice pieces in that lineup, but you're playing in a minor league ballpark again. And then here's where it gets tricky, because the first pitching matchup is going to be Will Warren against Osvaldo Beto. So there could be some runs scored in that game, because Beto's got an ERA just under 5 and Warren's got an ERA just under 6. That's Friday at 10:05, then Saturday at 4:05. Carlos Rodon, this could be a really good pitching matchup here. Carlos Rodon looking to keep it going here against the A's. Against J.P. Sears, who the Yankees was the former Yankee farmhand, went to the A's in the Frankie Montas deal. What a disaster that turned out to be. So it's Rodon 2.96 against Sears 2.93. That's 4:05 on Saturday. And then Sunday is – where is it? Sunday's also 4:05, because on the East Coast they start the games at 1:35, so I guess they don't do that on the West Coast. So our old pal, we're going to see two former Yankees starting for the A's in this series, as Luis Severino pitching to a 3.62 against the Yankees, who are TBD. I'm not sure who they're going to start in that spot. It could be Ryan Yarbrough. The Yankees did designate Carlos Carrasco for assignment earlier in the week, but he cleared waivers. He was outrighted to Scranton, so he is available. If they did want to go that route, maybe they'll bring up Alan Winans. I don't know what his schedule is, if it would even be his turn to pitch, but Yankees don't have anybody lined up. I would say, you know, those are obviously the three most likely scenarios, Carrasco, Winans, or Yarbrough. But the Yankees did – it's a tough choice for the Yankees because they don't have a lot of depth in for starting pitching. They DFA'd Carrasco. He cleared waivers for good reason, and the Yankees got him back. So he could potentially make this start on Sunday. But, you know, I was really down on this team after Monday's loss here, and I felt that the Yankees – just lacked a sense of urgency. And I called him out for it on social media. And I said this, that the biggest difference between the Yankees of 2024 and the Yankees of 2025 was that they don't have Juan Soto. And not for the reason you may think, because it's tough enough to replace Juan Soto's production in the lineup, but what the Yankees really miss is the sense of urgency that he brought this team. The Yankees knew they were in a win-now mode. 1 year with Juan Soto, you had to maximize it, and they did. They got to the World Series. Obviously didn't end the way we all wanted it to, but they got to the World Series. There were no punt lineups. Boone managed with urgency. The Boone managed to win every game. Everybody played every day. They got the most out of everybody. Go to the World Series. Fast forward to 2025 here. You know, Goldie's not locked up past this year. Devin Williams is not locked up past this year. But a lot of the core of this team is locked up past this year. And Goldie's older, so who knows? Devin Williams, do you even really want him locked up past this year? You know, Weaver's another pending free agent, but I think that could be a fairly easy thing for him and the Yankees to really make happen if we get, you know, we get down there. So a lot of the core of this team is in place here. And it just doesn't seem to be the urgency that we saw last year where the Yankees are putting out punt lineups. They're worried about tomorrow instead of today. The Yankees were always worried about today in 2024. In 2025, it seems like they're worried about tomorrow, that if things don't line up exactly perfectly for the Yankees, they'll pass it along till tomorrow. And that's the feeling that I got through Monday. And then the Yankees, something awoke in them in that seventh inning, where they started playing with some urgency. They started playing with a little bit of, hey, we got to get shit done around here. They had to come back on Tuesday. They came back twice on Wednesday. They took a series against a really good baseball team. So that's what I mean about baseball. Every day is different. Every day can have you feeling different emotions. And I didn't feel the urgency in this team after Monday. And now I feel like maybe there is that urgency that's back in this team after these last two games. And again, that can all change if they go and lose two out of three to Oakland. I'm going to call them Oakland forever against the A's. But you had what could be a season-defining series against the Padres where it could have all went south, where you blew a surefire win, and then you had opportunities where you could have easily lost the last two games of that series, but you pulled out the wins against a team that – if I told you they were in the World Series, it would not surprise you at all come October. So just like we said, that outing from Devin Williams on Wednesday could be season-defining, good or bad. This could be a season-defining series for the Yankees, where if now they start stacking series wins and they've been hovering, they get to 5 over, they lose a couple, they win a couple, they get back to get now, build it to 10 over, build it to 15 over, still. This is a very mediocre American League. This is a very mediocre American League East. Start putting yourself distance in between you and the rest of this American League East. Start putting some distance in between you and the rest of this American League. Because right now, yeah, the Yankees would win the East. They go to the postseason, but they'd be in the third spot. You don't want any spot. You don't want any part of that wild card series. The Yankees have to be one of the top two teams if they have any shot of going to the World Series this year. And I get it, it's early. The Yankees have played 37 games so far. We got a lot of baseball left to play. But you got to look down the future here of what this series could mean on a smaller level for just Devin Williams, because he's an important part to this team. And the Yankees want to get to where they got to go this year. They might need Devin Williams, okay? I said on an earlier episode, you might not need him, but the more weapons you can have out of that bullpen, the better. The more sure things you can have in there to go out there and get big-time hitters and big-time spots is only going to be an advantage for the Yankees. And this could be a series where the Yankees now put their foot to the gas here and start taking off a little bit. Yeah, they got a good team, you know, a surprising team in the A's, and then they're going into Seattle. But the Yankees always play well in Seattle, and Seattle's in first place, they're 8 over. And then they come home and play the Mets, and the Mets are 10 over right now. But you can't sit there and tell me the Yankees can't rattle off 7 wins out of the next 10. You can't tell me that. You can't sit there and say the Yankees are going to be overmatched in any of these 3 series, because I don't believe it. And if they use this series win against Seattle, against the Padres, to build off a strong 2 weeks here against some quality opponents, you're going to look back at that 7th inning on Tuesday and say that awoke something in this team. And then that 10th inning with Devin Williams, and saying that really catapulted this team. You look for turning points in a season, and I think San Diego could be a turning point. Again, it's all going to be dependent on these next 3 games, and you might say that you might listen to this and then watch the game tomorrow night and say, dude, you're dumb, because they just went out there and got mollywopped 10-3. Hey, but you know, that's baseball. And our emotions are like this. Woo! It's like a roller coaster. How many times have we come on here and said, this team sucks, we hate them, blah, 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 and then they come out and they have a series like this and just completely changes your mood and the way you feel about this team. But it's why I say all the time, if you're going to pick one, if you have poor mental health and you don't want it to get any worse, do not become a baseball fan.
Speaking of baseball fans, did you know the Pope, the new Pope, likes the White Sox?
I heard he was a Cubs fan. He's a White Sox fan?
His brother said he's a White Sox fan.
Oh, well, you know what? Congratulations to the new Pope. First American Pope. He's taking the name Pope Leo. So congratulations to the new Pope. Okay. We don't get religious on this show or political, but you brought it up. So new Pope. But is that how you want? Is that the last thing you want to say? Pope is a White Sox fan?
The allergies are getting to me.
The allergies are getting to you. All right.
The allergies.
So the allergies are getting to Sam. We want to thank everybody that's joined us here on this show, tape delayed on NYYU and listening on your favorite podcast platform. So subscribe. If you're watching on NYYU, subscribe to NYYU. Hit the like button and then go over your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to the show there so you don't miss any NYYST shows throughout the course of the year. We want to thank everybody for their continued support of NYYST and NYYU. And please, when you see somebody out on the street, and even if it's a stop and chat, say, hey, did you hear NYYST is the official Yankee podcast of Odyssey? It would mean a lot to us. And we want to thank everybody for listening and watching episode 463. Sem, say goodbye.
Goodbye.